I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This hour of the show, we are going to celebrate fatherhood with the author of Do Fathers Matter? What Science is Telling Us About the Parent We Have Overlooked. Paul Rayburn is our guest, and Paul says he got interested in fatherhood in the usual way he had children. In the 1980s, he had three children, two boys and a girl, who are now grown and prospering. And a decade ago, he remarried, and he and his wife, Elizabeth, now have two boys. Is it different the second time around? Did he learn things from the first time around? He's also a science writer, so he's delved into some really fascinating information about how other mammals raise their young, how fathers raise their young, who are the best fathers in the world. Are they humans or are they something else? And he looks at the changing role of fathers. As he says, it was back in the 1970s when we probably thought that fathers didn't make all that much difference. Well, it turns out they do make a lot of difference. Paul is a journalist and a blogger and the author of a number of books, including the one we're talking about, also Acquainted with the Night, A Parent's Quest to Understand Depression and Bipolar Disorder in His Children. His stories have appeared in Discover, New York Times Magazine, Scientific American. He's a past president of the National Association of Science Writers and the chief media critic at the Knight Science Journalism Tracker, a science editor at Business Week as well. As we celebrate fatherhood, it'd be great to hear from those of you who are fathers or grandfathers or stepfathers about the role and how the role has changed and how you see factoring into your child's life, how it's important. Are mothers more important? What do you think? Do fathers matter? The question of the hour. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. And we're also on Twitter, and that's @KDunnShow. Hi, Paul. Thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Kathleen. Happy to be here.
Yeah, great to have you here. It is true, and you specify the 1970s as a time when most psychologists said, "What do fathers matter?" The answer was, not much.
Well, yeah, and that was an easy decision to make at that point. Those were the days of yore when most mothers stayed home with the kids most of the time, often all of the time. Fathers went off to work, and they leave at 7 or 8 in the morning and come back at 6 or 7 at night. And so it was pretty obvious, even to the very smart people, that mothers must be more important because they were the ones with the kids. So the point I'm making, of course, is that nobody really questioned the state of affairs and said, well, does it have to be this way, and what's going on here? So I think what we have to thank for a reexamination of that is what was turned out to be mixed news about the economy. I think in the 60s and the 70s, the American family was ambushed by the economy. And before anybody was quite ready for it, suddenly it was difficult to make a family, keep a family alive and rolling along on one income. So more and more women went back to work, and we soon had a situation where all kinds of new work arrangements and family arrangements were developing, and I almost feel like mothers and fathers were handing the baby back and forth as they went in and out of the door.
Right.
And nobody knew quite how to handle all of that, and I guess we're still coping with that and trying to figure that out.
Yeah, I don't think we know how to handle it in 2015 either. We have a way to go, don't we?
Right.
But it is interesting when you talk about fathers' traditional roles, what you do was to bring home the bacon, and now it's fathers and mothers too. But that's a very important thing to do for a child. A roof over the head, food, get ready for some education. You have to provide some basics, and you have to work to do that, right?
That's right. I think sometimes we disparage the father who works for a living and otherwise doesn't seem to be overly involved with his kids. And that father, that kind of father, is doing the absolute best thing he can for his kids. The worst single thing that can happen to children is poverty.
Mm-hmm.
It has all kinds of negative consequences and repercussions. So a family, you know, a father who keeps his family fed and housed and reasonably comfortable is doing a wonderful thing, and we ought not to disparage those folks.
So you have a number of children. Five children is a number of children, and you've done it. You have three who are grown and two who are younger. You ask yourself the question, am I going to get it right? Is it going to be easier the second time around? Has it been?
Well, first of all, now that you've revealed to all the listeners that I have five children, I'd be interested in a show of hands how many think I'm completely crazy. But in any case, you know, I think people ask me all the time, is it easier the second time around? And usually I just lie and say yes. But because we're on the show, I'm going to tell the truth this time.
Thank you.
And the truth is, I find myself making a lot of the same mistakes. I mean, we are who we are. And, you know, when we behave in certain patterns and ways that we think it worked for us. So, I'm a little bit too quick to jump on my kids sometimes, something I thought I wouldn't do the second time around because I learned the first time that that wasn't necessarily productive. And so I try to watch for things like that. I think a very important factor is that I had a different partner each time, and, you know, the personality and behavior and thoughts of the partner have a very important role on how a father is going to behave, I've discovered.
Mm-hmm. And the interaction between the father and the mother is pretty important in development of the child, too. Don't ignore your spouse.
Yeah, that's right. So you want to have a lot of things. You want to be sure that you agree on a lot of things, the parents, and where you don't agree, you want to work out a good compromise position. And I think that's one thing I did learn, I have learned the second time around, is that the first time, you know, you feel good about kids and you have your first child and you're excited. And in my case, I won't speak for others, but in my case, I discovered there were all kinds of questions I had about how I wanted to raise my children that I hadn't really thought about. I thought I'd thought about them, but when it got time to actually do it, I realized I wasn't quite as prepared as I should have been.
Isn't it extraordinary? I think about this all the time, Paul, how much it takes to grow a child, how completely helpless these creatures are for such a long period of time.
Yeah, that's right. Humans, I discovered, looking at animal fathers and various things, human parents have as long a period of providing for children as any animal. Okay, let me say that a little bit better. Different animals have different sort of time frames in which their children can fend for themselves. Humans have the longest, 18 years or so, is the longest of any known animal. There's one obscure species of whale that actually might be a little bit longer, but as far as we know, we have the longest burden or pleasure in taking care of our kids.
I think you say, which is something to put in your head, it takes 13 million calories worth of breast milk, Cheerios, and mashed peas to raise a child to the age of nutritional independence. I love that.
You could tell I loved it too.
That's a whole lot. The book also has a lot of science in it, so let's go to today's hunter-gatherers, and people have gone to today's hunter-gatherers to tell us something about fathers before the development of agriculture and industry.
Right. So hunter-gatherers are important because if you go back about 10,000 years ago, we were all pretty much hunter-gatherers, but in some different circumstances, but that's how we made our living, roaming around looking for food. About 10,000 years ago is when people started to plant plants instead of searching for them, and that was the beginning of agriculture. So when we look at hunter-gatherers, we can learn a lot. And one of the groups that I looked at was a group called the Akha people in Central Africa. And these folks, I think, justifiably merit the title the best fathers in the world. And the reason is that the families go on the hunting and gathering trips together. So the kids go along with mom and dad when they go out for the day. They actually have a pretty good life. They're not struggling and straining every day to make enough to survive. They're able to work part of the day, and then they've got enough and they can knock off. And so the fathers will then often gather in the forest to, as fathers everywhere will do, to have a drink and talk over the day's events. And in their case, it's palm wine that they're drinking. And they take the kids with them. So it's not unusual for the fathers to all be there with a child on one hip discussing the day's affairs. And so the bottom line is that in the course of a day, fathers are something like 90% of the time they're within arm's reach of their children. Most of us would have a little trouble trying to recreate that here, but
yes.
So that's why I think it's fair to call them the best fathers in the world. And it's not just that they're close, but they engage with their kids.
Yes. But they don't engage with them at the expense of everybody else, right?
No, there's an interesting thing. The people who study the Akka, you know, they're with their children. Their children are part of daily activities in a way that we couldn't possibly manage to do here. But the kids are not the center of family life. They're part of family life. And I think sometimes when we're spending time with our kids, you know, the kids become the center of family life. We complain sometimes about not being able to have an adult conversation because the kids are interrupting all the time. And with the Akka people, that kind of thing is less of a problem.
Mm-hmm. You also write, and I find this fascinating, that they are taught, the children, how to use machetes, pointed digging sticks, sharp spears, and miniature axes, sometimes as young as the age of one?
Yeah, I find that, I can see you and I are on the same wavelength. I likewise found that horrifying.
Yeah.
I mean, you can see there's a virtue to that, and that the kids are given responsibility as soon as they're able to handle it. But I wondered about the possibility of accidents and injury. And I did find a reference after I finished writing the book, actually, some other studies that have found, a higher rate of injury among these children. So, you know, that doesn't quite fit our picture. And, of course, you know, when you study other cultures and things, nothing ever breaks down quite as neatly as you think it should. So that's a complicating factor. But the principle, the idea of getting the kids responsibility and letting them participate is a good one. We might just, you know, hold off on the knives for another few years.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess at some point you do have to, we tend to be overly protective, and it's easy to do that. I speak from experience. It's really easy to do that. But we do need to teach our children to be self-sufficient and to walk away from us and be productive and strong and people who know how to do things, lots of things.
Yeah, I think that's one of my problems, is to want to kind of grab the kids and help them right away rather than give them a few minutes to figure out things on their own. And you're right. You know, it's not only in practical terms do we want to encourage them to do things, but in emotional and social terms as well.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to infants for a moment, if we ever went to infants. Are fathers just as important as mothers, and what role do they play? It seems to me as though that's a heavy-duty bonding time that primarily is mom, if she's breastfeeding particularly, and the infant, that has been the relationship that's touted as primal. You've got to have that bond. Do you need a bond with dad, too, and what roles are dads playing now in their infants' lives?
Well, let me, if I might, go back before that. So you're asking me about infants because we think that's when the interaction between kids and fathers begins. But let me go back to one of the surprising things that I discovered working on Do Fathers Matter, which was that fathers have a role to play even during their partner's pregnancy. And here's how we know that. We know that because, you know, men walk around, particularly single men, with, you know, some level of testosterone, which does a lot of things in their bodies. Mm-hmm. One of the things it does, it's associated with competitiveness. This will come as a surprise to no one. And, you know, men need to be competitive in biological terms. Human males need to be competitive to compete for mates. So, you know, in biological evolutionary terms, reproducing is what we're here for. And so we've got to compete for an appropriate mate to do that, and the testosterone helps us do that. When it comes time to reproduce, so we actually get to that event, during pregnancy, men's testosterone levels fall. Now, this is mysterious and magical, and it's true. I mean, it's been measured, but why it should happen, it's a little mysterious and magical. And the thinking is that this is preparing men to be less competitive and more nurturing as they prepare to raise children. So we can talk about infants, but I just wanted to point out that even before that time, the father has not seen the fetus or had any contact with it. The two are already interacting.
Yeah, interesting. And the health of the father as the child is conceived is also important, isn't it?
Well, in multiple respects, yes. And one of the most striking, we've known for a long time that if a mother is depressed during pregnancy or after pregnancy, postpartum depression, a pretty common thing in mothers, that can increase the risk of depression in the child. It now turns out that the same thing is true of fathers. If a father is depressed during his partner's pregnancy, that child has a higher risk of having depression even in midlife. Hmm. So, again, a mysterious and kind of marvelous connection between fathers and kids that begins even before birth.
We're going to welcome phone calls. Our guest this hour, Paul Rayburn, is the author of Do Fathers Matter? What Science is Telling Us About the Parent That We Have Overlooked. He's also author of Acquainted with the Night, a memoir of raising children with depression and bipolar disorder. He's the chief media critic for the Night Science Journalism Tracker at MIT. He writes the About Fathers blog for Psychology Today, and you may know is a regular guest on NPR's Science Friday. Here's our phone number. What do fathers matter is the question of the hour. How do you answer that? You can do it historically. You can do it where it is now. You can do our traditional ideas about fathers and whether or not they've changed substantially and what we've learned scientifically about the importance of fathers. Or we can look at other animals on Earth and see what kinds of fathers they are. It's all interesting. In anticipation of Father's Day on Sunday. Here's how you reach us, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email talk@WPR.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Leave your messages there, please. And we're on Twitter as well, @KDunnShow. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Paul Rayburn is our guest. Fathers, our subject, our number, 800-486-8655. And we start our calls with Sandy in Minocqua. Hi, Sandy.
Oh, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just want to say that I am a 70-year-old woman, and I never had a father, and I miss that part of my life tremendously. Hmm. Now, when I was a young woman working on my career and very busy, I raised my own children and that. It was in the back of my mind. But now that I'm an older woman reflecting, I think, wow, I just really missed something so important in my life. And I have a question. I would like to know if the author knows what the percentage of people who are incarcerated in the United States, what percentage of these people are fatherless and have been fatherless? And I would like to take my answer off the air.
Thanks, Sandy.
Well, that's a great question. Unfortunately, one to which I do not have the answer. But what I can say is that, as you will see in Do Fathers Matter, the fathers contribute all kinds of important emotional and social benefits to their children. And there's clearly a correlation between father absence in a home and high rates of delinquency and later criminal behavior. So I'm sure there's, you know, we could conclude from that a lot of those kids involved in those things are going to wind up in jail, that's a significant number of people in prison who did not grow up with fathers. That piece is clear. Exactly how the numbers break down in prison, I don't know, but I think you're right to be concerned that it's probably a lot.
You start the book, actually, with this quote: "My father's eyes had closed upon the light of this world 6 months when mine opened on it. There's something strange to me even now in the reflection that he never saw me." Charles Dickens, David Copperfield.
Right. Right. So, that's right. I mean, that captures that kind of mysterious, you know, Dickens or David Copperfield didn't know what a father might have meant to him, but he clearly suspected that it was important, just like the caller, and he was right. I wouldn't call that a scientific observation, but it was a poignant one.
Mm-hmm. What about these? You mentioned, what's his name, Rodriguez, with the steroid problem, the drug problem, and blaming it on the fact that... But how did he blame it on his father? What did you write about that?
Which one were you talking about? I'm sorry.
Isn't it Rodriguez, Alex Rodriguez? I thought you wrote about that, didn't you?
And what was the, what was your question again,
That he blamed his father for his use of drugs because his father was absent, or what was the story?
Alex Rodriguez, the baseball player. Sorry.
Right.
Yes. Yes. So in a couple of clips, when he was in trouble, you know, a couple of years ago, for using performance enhancing drugs while playing baseball, he basically tried to pin it on his father. Now, it's, you know, as I just said, there is a correlation between father absence and delinquency and criminal behavior, and that includes drug use. So there's a certain element of truth, I think, in what he had to say. But the reason I brought that up is that, you know, we all sit around and we all want to be pop psychologists. Even, you know, fabulously wealthy baseball players want to be pop psychologists. And I don't think he's any better at it than I am. And none of us should try to do that. And the point was that in this book, Do Fathers Matter, what I wanted to do is say, look, let's clear out all that stuff. You know, we all think this, and we all have ideas about our fathers. We all have ideas, those of us who are fathers, about what we think we're doing or might be doing. And so let's clear aside all the folklore and the suspicion and the guesswork. And let's see what science really tells us about what fathers contribute to their kids. So in the book, what I have is a compilation of all kinds of interesting research that shows what fathers really do and what's important. And not only that they matter, but how they matter. And so we can get rid of things like Alex Rodriguez's claim, which, you know, surely had as much to do with, you know, defending himself as it did with trying to provide insight into his family and his father.
Right. Sandy, thanks for your call. Jerry is next. Hi, Jerry.
Hello there.
Hi.
Yeah, I just agreed with everything your guest is saying. But I want to bring the discussion around two fathers who are actually, I'm talking about single fathers.
Mm-hmm.
Single fathers. Fathers who are raising their own children without any help.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a growing population of those people. And I just want to just express the fact that, fathers sometimes, they get out of work and they come home and they don't want anything to do with, or they don't, I shouldn't say anything to do, but they are tired and they can't take care of their children. But there are a number of fathers out there who are raising these children on their own.
All right. I think there are a lot more mothers raising children on their own, but are there a lot of fathers too, Paul?
Well, I don't. There isn't, as far as I could determine, there isn't a lot of research on single father families. I suspect, as Jerry says, the number is growing, but there aren't really enough, and they're not easy enough to find to make possible a whole lot of research. But you're right to bring up, Kathleen, the idea of single mothers. We know there are a lot of those. And so I always like to make the point when I talk about the book and the research here that while fathers are very important for kids and fathers can make unique contributions to kids, that does not mean that a single mother cannot raise happy and healthy and productive kids. They clearly can. We've got a lot of single mothers around. They've raised a lot of kids, and things, turn out, you know, certainly can turn out very well. There's also, you know, a growing body of research on gay families, either two moms or two dads. And the general thrust of all that research is that, you know, those kids do fine, too. So I think the idea of single fathers and what happens to their kids and what they have to cope with is a really interesting question. I'm sure we'll know more about that in the coming years. But, you know, I think, you know, while I spend my time making the case that fathers matter, I think clearly any single men who are raising kids would be the first to say that mothers matter, too. We're certainly trying not to. This isn't an either-or which is more important. They're both important, and I think single fathers understand that better than most of us.
Right. And after all, it's almost Father's Day, so it's okay to concentrate on fathers.
We can take father's side here. Is that okay?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let's talk about play. There are some interesting studies, and you cite them in the book, that fathers do tend to play with their children in ways that children really respond to. And the way that fathers play with their children is a key for how healthy their development might be.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So this is one thing that I think I got right with all my kids. And when my older kids were little, the first thing I do when I came home from work is, pounce on them, more or less. I hope that sounds okay. And we often as not fall onto the couch or on the floor and have some epic wrestling matches and all this kind of thing, which where I worked out the stress of my day, and I guess they worked out the stress of their day too. So a lot of laughs and a lot of fooling around, and it turns out, little did I know at the time, and I think a lot of fathers don't understand how incredibly important that is for kids. And so what's happening is that mothers tend to be more likely to engage in structured play. Okay, mothers are going to be more likely to grab a board game or a deck of cards or play crazy eights or something. Fathers are a little more likely to, do this kind of, physical play, roughhousing, so forth. And the importance of that is that it actually prepares kids for sort of unexpected social circumstances. We used to have a game when I was a kid. My father used to have a game where my sister and I would stand in one part of the house and he'd hide somewhere else, and the two of us had to go and find him.
Great game.
it was a great game. And it was the kind of thing, he would jump out from somewhere and scare us to death, and we'd go running off again, and then we'd go back for more. And what was happening there, and what I think is happening when fathers roughhouse with their kids, and what the research shows, not what I think, is what the research shows, is that this prepares kids for unexpected and unusual and kind of volatile social situations. And they've actually found correlations between, when fathers play with kids like this, very active, jump out from behind the couch and scare them, whatever it might be, that those kids are more socially adept as teenagers and even as adults.
It's really interesting.
The thought is that this kind of play prepares them for that sort of, you walk into a room full of strangers, that can be a difficult social situation. And it's not quite like your father pouncing on you from behind a couch, but the emotional qualities are somewhat similar, and people do better in those kinds of social situations.
Let's go to Luther in Sheboygan. Hi.
Hi. Yes, I, as a father of two young children, was finding myself getting a little choked up as you were describing the people in Africa and the thought of having my children near me 90% of the day. I'm wondering if maybe you would agree that possibly Americans maybe aren't satisfied with just meeting our needs, but instead we focus on always attaining more material possessions. And I'm wondering if maybe that is at the sacrifice of the father child relationship. And just if you have any comments, I'd take them off the air.
Yeah, I mean, that's not something I looked at in terms of research on that. It makes sense. Clearly, we all know families where, the parents really aspire to more financial comfort or aspiration, and we wonder sometimes whether those parents are spending enough time with their kids. So there's a balance in all these things. As we said right at the outset, as Kathleen brought up, it's important for fathers to provide for their families, fathers and mothers increasingly these days, to provide for their kids. And so that's a critically important thing. Do some people take it too far? I'm sure they do. I don't know if we have research that breaks that down in real fine detail.
What about the research? This seems to be something that we talk about and hear different studies all the time. The amount of time that you spend, that, this quality of time that you spend, or if you need to spend a certain amount of time, is it okay to be away from your child for longer periods of time? What's the right amount of time?
Well, you look up in the handy chart and look up the age of your kids and find the exact right amount of time. clearly, it doesn't work like that.
No.
And so, it's funny because years ago we used to hear this idea of quality time was a big deal for a while.
Mm-hmm.
We don't hear as much about it now. The idea was, you know, you spend 20 minutes with your kid before bed, but you make it really quality time. You stare them in the eyeballs and everything will be fine. And I have bad news for people who want that to be true. The bad news is more time with the kids is a good thing and a useful thing and a thing we should all try to do. But more important than the amount of time is the engagement. So I can say with regard to fathers, the important thing in the relationship is the engagement and a kind of easy back and forth in the relationship. So what I mean by that, this is, again, another piece that came up that spoke to me personally, and that is that it's a temptation as the father to want to specify what we're going to do in our whatever time we have, you know, and so I'll pick the board game, say, instead of letting my son pick the board game. So the idea is let the kids have input into what game they want to play. Let them, you know, and my 5-year-old still has a very creative sense of the rules in chess. He moves pieces in directions no chess master has ever contemplated.
Mm-hmm.
But that gives him the opportunity to have fun, and we're having fun together. We're playing the game, even if the knight is moving in the wrong direction. So those kinds of things can be fun. And with that kind of engagement, and again, I try to remind myself of this a lot, that's the kind of thing that creates a strong relationship. And, you know, in some respects, people, you know, years ago, people fretted about kids growing up, you know, without sort of proper respect for discipline and so forth. And the idea was fathers would be too easy on them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, fathers could be stern and teach them discipline because that's what it means to be a man. And so if you think about that a little bit, you know, if a father is stern and kind of distant and cold, is the son really going to want it to grow up to be like that? Maybe not. You know, maybe that's not what he aspires to. If the father is warm and engaging and respects the son's decisions, maybe that looks like an appealing thing to want to imitate. And maybe that's, and in fact, the research shows that that is the way for a son to grow up with, you know, typical masculine kinds of characteristics and be who he is.
Thanks, Luther, so much for your call. Marianne in Portage. Hi, Marianne. Marianne, are you there? Oh, well, I have an idea of what she wanted to talk about, and so let's talk about it. She just lost her dad, and she wanted to know about how important dads are to girls' development. Now, I know you have daughters, so you can speak from experience, but the father-daughter relationship is an important one.
Yeah, there's no question about that, and I have a little story to tell to illustrate that. So if we had to think, again, to get back to biology here, if we had to think of, you know, girls growing up in biological terms, you know, certainly one of the single most important things that happens to a girl growing up is when she enters puberty, and to boys too, for that matter. But, you know, this is a profound biological change that occurs to daughters at, you know, in their early teenage years, whatever it might be. And so you wouldn't expect that any external circumstances could really change that. You know, when it's time for a young girl to enter puberty, it's time, and that's kind of her biological clock. Well, it turns out that if a father is not present in the house, girls are enter puberty at a significantly younger age.
Oh, my.
And now, just because the father isn't there, okay, and then those girls who enter puberty are then at increased risk for risky sexual behavior, and they're at increased risk for teen pregnancy. So this is another one of these things, like the, you know, like the father and his partner when his partner's pregnant. Here we have a connection between fathers and daughters that's the most profound kind of biological connection. We don't know exactly how it happens. The thought is perhaps that the father's pheromones affect the timing of the daughter's puberty. In other words, his scent, you know, that her body can sense that there's a protector around. And the reason I say protector is because, this is speculation, this isn't the science piece. The speculation is that in biological terms, if a daughter is growing up in a secure household, she's got time to mature at a slow, you know, deliberate rate and then her body becomes, she enters puberty, her body ultimately becomes ready for reproduction, so she can have her own children. If the father isn't there, the body may be sensing, the biological system might be sensing that the situation isn't quite as secure and that she should be in a hurry to mature and establish her own household that might be more secure.
That's fascinating.
So it's just one little piece of it, but it's emblematic. You know, it shows to me if there is this profound connection at this point in time, that connection, you know, must be there before and afterwards.
Yeah. Here's an email that comes in from Laura. It's on Facebook, actually. I wouldn't want to be in this parenting game, she writes, without my husband. He's the sole provider for our household, allowing me to stay home and homeschool the kids. He's a fantastic role model, able to teach them things I can't. I found it infuriating when our children were small. The public held fathers to a much lower bar than mothers. When they were babies, he'd get comments like, "Aw, what a good dad," for doing nothing more than holding the baby.
Yeah, well, that's true. And one of my favorites, of course, and a lot of fathers who are activist fathers and people concerned about fatherhood is when you go out with your kids and they say, "Oh, Dad's, you're babysitting." You're babysitting your kids. Say, well, actually, they're mine.
Right. Steve in Madison is next. Hi, Steve.
Well, hi, Kathleen. It's a great show. Well, I'm just calling. Like I said, you're a screener. I don't really like to toot my own horn much, but I was a stay-at-home dad for 13 years, and I have a great, lovely 23-year-old daughter and a 19-year-old son. And I did that from age 5 and 8, they were, and my wife and I decided it was best just for me to stay home. And talking about the caller before, just, boy, the memories fly back. The trials and tribulations you go through, especially, I think girls have it harder personally, but middle school and high school, but we got through them all with friends and, you know, breakups and things like that. And
right.
And with my son, they're just both really great, caring, wonderful people. And I just think that, I don't know, I'm kind of rambling. The most amazing things I've witnessed in my life are both of my children being born and when I see my kids every day.
Yes.
So that's about it. I just wanted to say that. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Steve, very much for the call. How that speaks to the heart, doesn't it, Paul?
Yeah, it's nice to have him remind us that we're talking about a very emotional thing here. I will say one thing, particularly for stay-at-home dads, that I found absolutely no research whatsoever that suggests that being a father is easy.
Right.
It's a big job.
Yeah. To be a parent is just this. Really, you're right. It's such a big job, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it can be overwhelming. And that's why we spend so much time, I think, thinking about, you know, work and family balance and all these things. Because, you know, no matter what we try to do, it's extremely difficult to try to give the kids as much time as they should have and try to hold down a job on the outside.
Right. Right, yeah. We are going to welcome more phone calls. Paul Rayburn is our guest this hour. A few days we are away from Father's Day, and he seemed like the perfect guest for where we are. Do fathers matter? What science is telling us about the parent we've overlooked is the name of his new book. 800-486-8655 is our number. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter as well @KDunnShow. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. I don't want the hour to go by without getting a better lesson on. We talked about the hunters-gatherers and the Aka pygmies, but we haven't talked about other mammals and who else might be wonderful fathers in our animal kingdom or who's not a wonderful father. What have you observed?
Well, one that I liked was the titty monkey, which is a rather small monkey, and they likewise are they might get the title of the best mammalian fathers, the most devoted fathers. So what they will do is they put on weight. Now, this can happen with humans, too. The fathers, the males, will put on weight during their mate's pregnancy. And the reason they do this, and it may be a shadow of this in humans, too, for the same reason, is to nutritionally equip themselves to help take care of the children, or the offspring. I guess we shouldn't call monkey offspring children, but anyway, you get the idea.
Right.
So to take care of the offspring when they're born, and so what happens in these monkeys is that the mothers will nurse the offspring, and as soon as they're done feeding them, the father takes them on his back and spends all the rest of the time with them. So he's got the infant on his back 90% of the time. And so this weight gain during pregnancy is crucial because they actually lose so much weight that they fall, you know, considerably below where they were before pregnancy. I mean, they are really, this is tough work. This is a great workout for these monkey fathers who are carrying the infant around all the time. And the infants in this species tend to be much more attached to their fathers than to their mothers. The monkey, you know, shows more signs of upset when separated from his father than it's when his mother. They squawk more when they're separated from the father, and researchers have even found their stress hormones climb higher when they're separated from their fathers. At the same time, that father, while he's burning up all these calories carrying the infant around, is almost always within sight of the mother. So there's that connection there, too. Now, whether that's because he wants to make sure she doesn't mate with anybody else, or whether that's a sign of deep affection, we haven't been able to ask any titty monkey fathers and find out.
Let's go to more phone calls. Bill in La Crosse. Hi, Bill.
Hi. I've been listening to your program, and for me, Father's Day is the worst day of the year because it is just a reminder of how I have failed. As a father, I have more than two children, and all three are adults struggling with life. And I was a single father, and I worked really, really hard to give it the best upbringing that I could. But what do you have to say to fathers who feel as if they have failed at this so important role of being a role model and a caretaker for their children?
And why do you feel you failed? Because they're not financially doing well, Bill, or what?
Well, not to be too specific, but, you know, there are significant substance abuse issues and other issues that were never a part of my life, and I certainly didn't encourage my children to be a part of that.
Mm-hmm.
Culture, but I couldn't do anything to prevent it.
Paul?
Well, I don't have a scientific answer for you, but speaking as one father to another, I mean, I think my kids went through a lot of ups and downs and illnesses and multiple issues, too. They're all doing well now, but we had a very bumpy ride at certain points. And, you know, they're going to be who they are. They're not exactly like us. They share a lot of characteristics with us because they're our children, but they're different individuals, and they're going to do what they have to do or feel they have to do or what they want to do. So I don't think, you know, we all have this. Even the fathers of kids who might seem to you to be very successful are going to wonder whether they didn't do the right things. You didn't do enough. I think most of us have that. But at a certain point, let's say, okay, you know, it's their lives. They're going to make the choices they're going to make, and we have to let them do that, and hope, you know, help where they let us help, and hope that things can turn around.
Mm-hmm. So, Bill, read the book. Maybe that would be helpful. And it's hard. We were talking about it earlier. I mean, it's hard to be a parent. There are all kinds of people who have all kinds of problems with kids. We all do at times, and you know, sometimes it'll get better for you, don't you think, Bill?
Well, that's what I have been told by my therapist and counselor, that I have to let go and realize they make their own decisions. But when, you know, you see happy families all around you and supposedly successful families all around you, it just reinforces that somehow you failed. It didn't work for you.
Yeah.
I'll check out the book.
Yeah. And I think what you said is so true, Paul, that they may appear to be happy, but everybody's going through stuff. Everybody's going through it, don't you think?
Right. Our kids and us.
Right. Absolutely. Bill, thank you. And happy Father's Day, Bill. Katya in Germantown. Hi.
Hi, Kathleen. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
In regards to your previous caller, Bill, that just kind of made me so sad.
Mm.
And as a daughter myself, I would just tell him that half the part of being a good parent is just being there.
Mm-hmm.
Just really appreciate just having their parents around is a great thing.
Mm.
And then my other comment is I think fathers are great role models, not only for their sons, but for their daughters. And they really help shape, I know mine did. My dad helped shape my worldview and instill lots of great values. And I'm just thankful for that. So that's my comment.
Thank you, Katya. Craig in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. I just wanted to call in quickly and say I was just remembering my two kids, which are 23 and 24 years old now. And when they were younger, I was self-employed. My wife often, so we didn't have that much money, but I still remember almost daily going to the park, the library, the museum, Bucks games, and those are just by far the best memories I have. So any dads out there now that, you know, have your kids at a young age, don't worry about work so much and focus on your kids.
What are you going to do on Father's Day, Craig?
Well, unfortunately, my daughter's in New York, so I miss her a lot. But my son, I don't know, will probably just, I think I might have to work, so he'll be helping me work, hopefully.
There you go.
I spend some time with my son still. So.
Yeah. Thank you. Thanks, Craig, so much. What will you do for Father's Day, Paul?
Well, at the moment, we're trying to decide whether we're going to have an Italian meal at home or go out to an Italian restaurant. So that's the big decision. But I'll have one of my kids with me. The other two are different corners of the country, so that'll be fun.
Yeah. Thanks, Craig, for the call. Aaron in Baraboo. Hi.
Hi, Kathleen. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
This is going to be my first Father's Day. My wife and I just had our first daughter about 6 months ago.
Great.
And I own my own business, but I work from home kind of during the day and you know, work in the evenings. So my wife and I kind of left a career in banking and whatnot. My wife and I decided that I would stay home and take care of my daughter during the day. And I just wondered if, you know, if you had any advice for, you know, stay-at-home dads or some of the social. Sometimes people look at stay-at-home dads a little differently than stay-at-home moms, and just kind of thought I'd see what advice you might have.
All right.
So there is a group that you can, some really great guys that I've met in the course of doing my research here. If you look on Google for City Dads Group, you'll find a network of groups. I don't know who's in Wisconsin, but a network of groups around the country of dads who get together, some stay-at-home dads, some working dads. But they will also have links. There is a stay-at-home dads organization. I don't recall the name of it. But if you go to City Dads Group and, you know, email them or ask around, you can find it. And, you know, they have a conference every year where they get together and they do a lot of great things and a great group of people. So you may or may not be able to find them locally, or you may or may not be able to make the conference, but you could certainly establish an online relationship with these guys.
Okay, thank you very much, Aaron, for your call. And Paul, thank you very much for being with us. We didn't get to all parts of the book, but we got a lot of calls and a lot of interest in the topic. Thanks for writing about dads.
Yeah, I just want to quickly say happy Father's Day to my dad, who's 93 and who's going to be mad that I gave his age on the radio. So,
hey,
Father's Day, Dad.
When you're 93, it's okay. You got to be proud you're 93, don't you think?
That's true. That's the way I feel about it. I'd like to make it that long.
Absolutely. Here's to your dad at 93 and above. Thanks, Paul. Paul Rayburn, our guest this hour. His book is Do Fathers Matter? What Science is Telling Us About the Parent That We Have Overlooked. Paul is on Science Friday frequently. He writes about Fathers on the About Fathers blog for Psychology Today, and he is past president of the National Association of Science Writers, and the list goes on. Happy Father's Day to all of you. I hope you have a great celebration this Sunday and that we remember in many significant ways our fathers who play very big roles in our lives. Miss my dad a lot. So thank you to K.P. Whaley for producing this hour and to Scotty Myers for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. Thank you for your calls. News is coming up from National Public Radio and then Central Time. I'll be with you again on Monday at 1 o'clock for our regular All Things Political. Thanks for listening.